Welcome back. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 67 of the Skulls Cast, where Medibot and myself discuss a topic of perennial interest to many.
Okay, let's answer some questions, though.
Let's do that. First question comes from Jimmy Bones, who asks, "You cotton much to Arsène Lupin novels? Thievery, French detectives, anti-detectives, skulls." Which I unfortunately, tragically, have to answer in the negative. I haven't read any.
I'm illiterate, so good luck there.
Yeah, there you go. But I do love the character, and every bit of Lupin that I've watched is really good, so I imagine that it would be at least at that level. I just imagine the character alone carries a lot of that interest and weight, and so it's probably pretty good. Thanks for your question, though, and I do want to look into those, and we might be able to talk more about them later.
Yay.
We do, of course, have more questions. These come from our new Twitter tracker. We have a Twitter tracker.
Twitter tracker.
So if you want to ask us any more questions, just hit us up at SkullsAsked. I managed to get that name. No one had taken it yet.
Yay.
How did that happen? I'm so lucky. Anyway, our first comes from R9C Warhead, who asks, "I'd like to hear Medibot's thoughts on Mark of the Ninja, and if they have changed since the time he streamed the game."
Mark of the Ninja is pretty alright. I guess for those unfamiliar with it, it is a 2D platformer with heavy stealth elements. It does a good job of actually communicating, you know, important aspects of stealth gameplay, such that the stealth is fun and not tedious. Also, the levels are set up pretty well to reward going in with a plan, but you can also choose to play it as a brutal slash-em-up sometimes. Except, like, you have a sword and they all have guns. So, you know, be careful. It's pretty decent in, like, I guess, I don't even remember what I didn't like about it. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Okay,
it's a pretty good game because
it categorically. I mean, there are a lot of power-ups. How did you like those?
The power-ups were good because they felt distinct from one another, and you had to select them at the beginning of the level, although sometimes you could find a spot in the middle of the level where you could change what items you had equipped. But they each lent themselves to specific play styles and or situations and felt, you know, meaningfully distinct in terms of behavior and in terms of, you know, who would like them. Because I went for a mostly sneaky around route and tried to minimize the amount of murders I committed. So I, you know, took things like the smoke bomb and the cardboard box and, you know, the firecracker that just makes a noise wherever you throw it and stuff like that. But you can also choose to play it as, like, I have a dart that's going to make this guy insane and shoot all his friends and then they're all dead. You can choose to do that. I didn't want to. So I guess, like, in a lot of ways, like, seeing how a person chooses to play the game on their first time through kind of says something about them. I don't know what it says about them. But it probably says something. The plot was adequate and unobtrusive. What else? It had a scoring system that was fair and made sense. And instead of assigning you a letter grade, it, based on, you know, wacky criteria or your score, I guess it sort of did in the sense that there were three, like, score tiers that you wanted to earn. But the way scoring worked was transparent enough that you could figure out a good way to maximize your score on a given level. It also had... What else? I had some control issues with it, because it's a very context-sensitive game. And if you're next to two context-sensitive objects, it can be a little finicky to make it interact with the one that you want to interact with. However, overall, I'd say it was a pretty good game that handles the idea of stealth and sneakiness pretty well. I never played at all on the New Game Plus, where they actually make it even more, I guess, realistic in the sense that the area behind your player character, because he's either facing left or right, is actually blurry, but you can still hear things that are behind you. Whereas in the initial playthrough, you have, you know, perfect 2D platformer vision, except for things that are, like, behind doors or whatever. Or rather, you can see left and right freely in, you know, you're bounded by walls and doors and such.
Okay, what did you think of the overall game length? Is it a good length?
It was. I'm going to say it was a good length, because I can't... I don't remember thinking, like, oh, why didn't they have a level where X happened? Which I guess is sort of my yardstick for whether a game length is good. But it also, they also didn't really repeat themselves at all. Each level felt like it introduced interesting things that required refinement of previous plans or new plans entirely. So I felt that they explored their design space adequately. Which means that the game must be the correct length. I don't remember how many hours it was offhand. Six?
What did you think of the AI in the game?
The AI? The AI was pretty good. The enemies had, you know, well-defined abilities to see and hear. By default, they have routes that they patrol, which makes sense because they are guards. But their patrol routes basically made sense. Your job was to find the gap in it, or to create a gap in it. But also, if you were detected, they were basically getting detected. I learned to just, you know, restart from checkpoint as soon as I was detected most of the time. Because it doesn't mean you're dead immediately, but it does mean that they're about to, like, seal every exit and really tighten their observation patterns around where they saw or heard you. Which makes sense. That's believable. You can trick them in ways that it makes sense that you could trick a person. And that also adds to the believability. You know, a light behind someone shadows. He whips his head around. You're like, wait, what was that? Hold on, who did that? And that gives you enough time to, you know, sneak past. So the AI felt correct. The enemies behaved in ways that I expected them to behave. Which is to say they did not always behave in the way I wanted them to behave, but rather the way that made sense given their goals. It was a believable intelligence that I was fighting against.
All right, well, that dovetails nicely into our actual topic for tonight.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna stop you from trailing off about Mark of the Ninja.
That's pretty good. Try a demo, why not?
We're talking about AI.
AI in video games.
In video games.
Specifically.
Specifically in video games.
All right. So.
Boy, what a topic.
The probably the most... do you mind if I just sort of start in on this?
Go for it.
Okay, so probably the first sort of topic you want to be thinking about under the branch of game AI is pathfinding. Most frequently in the actual, you know, 2D or 3D space that your game takes place in, but sometimes in a more abstract way, it's pathfinding. You know, an agent has a current position and a desired position, or perhaps a sequence of desired positions, and there are obstacles, you know, that make it a not immediately trivial of just, you know, walk straight from point to point. But paths must be determined, and there are good algorithms for this. Pathfinding is important because many games, that's something the player is doing. And so if we have some amount of symmetry in terms of the player's goals and the computer's goals, then it makes sense that they're both sort of interested in this problem of, you know, I am here, I want to be there, how do I get here to there? And obstacles aren't just things like crates or walls or doors, but also things like, I know there is a man looking down that hallway with a gun. You know, so that is essentially impassable. I should, you know, view that as a less desirable path to take. The reason why pathfinding is so important is because pathfinding is tied to movement, and movement tends to be important in games that have it, you know. Well, if a game has movement, moving along a correct path is likely important to your game.
Yeah, and also likely distractingly awful if it's bad.
Yes.
This is one of the first things that anyone is going to notice about your game, even if they have very low general familiarity with AI.
Yes.
Just
because
the casual observer
when it is poorly implemented, it is easy for any observer, regardless of their expertise with games or artificial intelligence, to say, wait, why did that guy do that?
Wait, why is he running away?
Why is that guy running away? Now, if he's running away to hide behind that crate because, you know, he's injured and he's waiting for his buddies to cover him, or he's trying to lure you in to flank you out, then it will eventually make sense. Also, overly simplistic AIs tend to be very obvious and boring, because figuring out your enemy's AI, if it can be a very interesting problem to solve, for the same reason why when you're playing a game against a human, figuring out how they make decisions is an interesting problem to solve. So having behaviors that are overly simplistic makes your game too immediately figured out and therefore boring. I have played a limitless number of games where the AI is march towards the player and fire at their direct position, which are solved by moving in a circle. And it does not matter what other pretty things you have attached to this game, if that is your AI, I have already beaten your game. And that is boring.
Yeah, so pathfinding's important. What other general idea about AI is important?
Right.
We're going to start with... I figured out the framework for this discussion that we're going to use to not simply go on talking for hours and hours and hours about every single experience we've ever had with artificial intelligence in games or any other context. We're going to start out by establishing the big important topics and then choose specific examples of games that we have played that we want to talk about.
Yes.
So, big topic number two.
Big topic number two. I forget the exact term for this. I want to say it's called a hierarchical decision graph. The idea being that an enemy agent or team of enemy agents, you may be able to treat a, you know, what appears to be a team as a single entity from the perspective of your AI, may have multiple goals or tasks to do in a situation. And these goals or tasks are sort of the top level of what you're thinking about. You know, let's think about a game, you know, a first-person shooter capture the flag game. You know, at any given time in the game, you know, let's think about what a specific goal at any given time may be. Certainly, acquiring the opponent's flag and returning it safely to the base is a possible goal. Killing the an enemy who has captured the flag, who has captured our team's flag, is a goal. Killing an enemy who looks like they're on the way to get the flag, and then there's just killing an enemy because they're there, and they're, you know, if I kill him, he can't come get the flag. And at any given time, we'll say, okay, our agent has chosen one of these goals. It's like, this is the thing I want to be doing. And frequently you can prioritize them. You can say, you know, this one will prioritize capturing the enemy flag above killing the enemy flag bearer. Whereas this one may have opposite priorities. Another agent may have opposite priorities. It says it's more important to kill the guy who stole our flag than it is to steal the enemy flag. And then, within that, once you've chosen a high-level goal, we go down a level and we think about how are we accomplishing this goal. If your goal is to protect the flag, let's say, it can be like, okay, you know, they can get to the room with the flag from here, here, and here. Let's set up a patrol route, perhaps modified based on past player behavior. They've come in this way a lot, and they don't seem to come in this other way a lot, so guard the way where they usually come in. If our goal is to capture the enemy flag, we say, okay, which path do I frequently encounter the least resistance, or in which path will I have the most support from my allies? And then we can set, we are at a point, we have a destination point, and we do a spatial pathfinding problem to perform actions within the game world. And then, so then, you know, we go down a level into our, you know, we've chosen a goal, and that, but then we also have conditions to change our high-level goal. And then when that happens, we jump over to that high-level goals decision graph, and we be like, okay, new plan. I killed the enemy who had the flag, so I no longer need to be worried about killing the enemy who has the flag. What do I want to do with my time now? And so by moving around in this tree and figuring out how, or graph rather, not tree, you can come up with pretty convincing robot behavior because they have goals and implement plans to achieve them. And that's basically what people do when they play a game. So a robot that does that will behave in an understandable way.
All right, that's pretty good. So we have pathfinding, and we have tree or graphs. Decision, yes. Graphs. What else? What are the big topics?
Well, okay, so we've chosen something that gets into how to, like, choose. You know, we've chosen a goal, and we're trying to figure out what's the best way to do it. And one way to think about that is you make a decision tree.
This is you restating what you just did. We're moving on from that.
Well, I'm talking... Okay, let me tell you how it's different.
Okay.
Okay. So, at this immediate moment in time, here we're at the finest level of all, where it's like, do I move left, move right, move forward? And it's like, okay, if I move left, here are the resulting game states from that. And from there, my opponent has these choices, and then we have another set of game states that result from that. And we go down this tree, and at a certain depth, we either reach an end state of the game, where one player has won, you know, either I've won or I've lost, Or we get, or we decide, like, okay, we can't evaluate this tree any further because evaluating a decision tree takes time, and we need to apply some heuristic to evaluate the utility of this game state. How good is this game state for me? And we take all these potential future game states, we run them through our heuristic, and then we will choose the sequence of events that maximize the utility in the resulting game state. And the important algorithm here is called the minimax algorithm. The idea being that if the heuristic function for evaluating game state has a positive value when it is beneficial for me, and a negative value when it is detrimental for me, beneficial for my opponent, then we assume that our enemy behaves by always attempting to minimize utility, and I behave by always attempting to maximize utility. And by doing this, we avoid worst possible states. This can also be weighted based on, you know, you can say, if I do this, you know, if it is equally easy for your opponent to make any of the following moves, then you weight them all equally. But if it's like, oh, you know, if he chooses to do this, it has a 10% chance of succeeding, but it's very bad for me. And so, you know, maybe I'm willing to take that chance based on what the utilities of other possible future game states are. This is the basis of artificial intelligence is for most board games, especially deterministic board games, such as checkers. You know, in any given game state, there is a set of legal moves, and players take turns taking legal moves, and the computer can just sort of see into the future. And that's also what people do when they're playing these board games. They attempt to set up traps or bad situations for their opponent. So that the minimax tree is something to be thinking about in terms of AI in general, but also game AI.
All right, so we have pathfinding, we have decision trees or decision graphs, and then the minimax.
Yeah. What else?
How about adaptation?
Adaptation. That's a good point. So, when you're designing your heuristic or your, you know, one of these, you know, when you're implementing your algorithm, you as the game designer, someone who understands the game, can think of ways in which certain choices or states become better or worse based on player tendencies. If the player is continuously, you know, performing a certain action that, you know, beats the AI should think of performing that action that led to a loss as being worse and worse. This can sort of tie into the minimax somewhat, in the sense that it can learn that, you know, this game state that I thought was, like, neutral is actually really bad for me. The player has essentially said, you know, if we get to this game state, you know, I'm going to choose this and then I will win. So I, as the robot agent, should view that as a bad thing. And, you know, if that has a lower value than other states, I'm going to, just by following my regular algorithm at this point, make different choices.
All right, so with increasing steps of complexity here, we've covered a great deal of what it means to have an AI in your game.
Yes.
If you know about these topics, then you can pick out specific games and kind of see what's happening or what's behind the curtain, as it were. And now we're going to talk about games that we've played where we understand the AI or would like to mention the AI, and we'll go back and forth. So I wanted you to tell us about a game that you've played where you can talk about the AI in a meaningful way.
All right. I guess I would mention Unreal Tournament 2004.
It's a pretty good one. I've played this one myself.
It's a first-person shooter game, offering both solo and team play. And sometimes I would play on a team with other human players against computer-controlled players. And what it always felt like to me was that if we turned up the AI, they were just better at headshotting me. Which certainly does increase the challenge level of the game, but that's not smarter play so much as it is simply more skillful play. Rather, they're better at this important dexterity component that is, you know, simulated because the computer does not actually move a mouse to aim the way a human does while playing this game. I never really detected any differences in the way they would behave in terms of the paths they would take through a map, or the way that they would coordinate as a team or attempt to set traps. It always just felt like, you know, if I turned up the difficulty, we both meet at the top of the bridge and he headshots me. If I turned down the difficulty, we both walked up to the top of the bridge and he shoots wide and I kill him.
Yeah, so not terribly good.
Not terribly good. It felt like the difficulty crank was not really was not affecting their planning abilities, merely their dexterity component simulation abilities.
All right, I will mention Scourge Hive.
Mm.
Scourge Hive is a game that no one has heard of. That's for the Nintendo DS. I picked it up because someone told me it was Metroid of Mana, combining the play styles of like Super Metroid kind of games, like run and shoot, explore, power up kind of things, which it has, and the isometric tile 2.5D kind of level view of Mana games. And it was good up to a point. One of the glaring huge problems that it had was enemy AI.
Mm.
Because almost all of them were move at my move speed in the direction of the player.
Mm.
And then hop at the player, and then they would get the player, and that was it. And this was a big problem, because the reaction that I had to take was to be constantly running away from them and then turn around to aim and shoot, because you shoot in the direction that you're moving.
Mm.
So you kind of have to move toward them to shoot them, and you had to figure out this kind of like run, flick, shoot, run, flick, shoot, run, flick, shoot, run, flick, shoot, constantly in order to get through the game. Up until the point where I realized that what I should be doing is just ignoring all of these idiot enemies and run past them, because it's not worth it to try and fight all of these completely terrible AI puppet things. It was a very obvious bad AI. It's rather incomplete, not at all reflective of any kind of intelligence, just sort of...
This is the sort of AI that I am satisfied with when a 12-year-old using Game Maker implements it. You know, someone who is just starting out, who is just, you know, who is learning about games.
Yeah, there's something games to be said for the chase, too.
Yes. But, speaking of chase, if I may mention another game...
That's what I wanted you to do. We were going back and forth about
that. I feel excellent AI is Miss Pac-Man.
Oh my goodness.
It is beautifully simple and subtle and confounds players to this day. Even once you understand it, it is still a very good plan that they have. There are four ghosts in the game of Ms. Pac-Man. I certainly hope all of our listeners are familiar with the game of Ms.
Pac-Man. If you're
not
familiar with Ms. Pac-Man, stop what you're doing right now. I don't
care
what it is.
Please play Ms. Pac-Man. It is
a
very fine
game.
Go play
Ms. Pac-Man and then come back to
this, right? Superior game. There are four ghosts. They are color-coded so that a player may immediately identify which ghost is which. And each ghost has their own pattern of behavior, which can be understood and planned around to some extent. There's one that chases the player, Ms. Pac-Man, who simply follows a just rote pathfinding. I am here, Ms. Pac-Man is there, move towards Ms. Pac-Man through the shortest available path. The ghosts are limited to changing directions at intersections, which is why it's possible to avoid them at all. One of them attempts to trap you. And I'll get back to that in a second, because for years playing this game, I didn't quite understand how it was trapping me. How did it know I would be there? It always does, and so I was always careful around it, but I didn't understand how it was doing it. Then you have one ghost who actually shies away from Ms. Pac-Man, who will attempt to move, sets up a path to take that goes, I want to say, in the opposite direction that Ms. Pac-Man is moving, which means sometimes if you get yourself into weird situations, he's right on top of you. But he's usually not going to be getting you. And then one makes random decisions at every intersection. He's chaotic, which means a lot of the time he will just be on the other side of the screen and largely irrelevant, although other side of the screen, when you have a cylindrical playing field, is not always as safe as it seems. Wait, is it cylindrical or toroidal?
It's cylindrical. I don't think that they added like
there's no up-down transition.
Yeah.
But getting back to the ghost that ambushes you, Pinky. Years after I had first played the game of Ms. Pac-Man, I found a website with detailed information about the game. And what I discovered is that this brilliant mastermind of a ghost had a plan that was only a hair's breadth more complex than the dumb brute who just chased you down. And that is, it looked at Ms. Pac-Man's position and which direction she was facing, and looked four character spaces ahead, and went there. And it's beautiful in its simplicity, and how well it will consistently cut you off if you move in a direct and obvious way. If you weave about and make your true intentions ambiguous, you will confuse this ghost. A quick change of direction will make it commit to a wrong course of action. Whereas, you know, twitching around and changing directions will do nothing to the brute who simply, you know, locks onto your position and wants to pummel you.
Mm.
But something as simple as be where, you know, the red one wants to be where you are, and the pink one wants to be where you are soon going to be. And these two in tandem, just these two ghosts, without adding the random or the timid one, are a formidable pair of enemies. One is likely to approach you from behind, the other from the front, and they'll cut you off, and you'll be trapped. And it's perfect for the game. That level of AI is perfect for the game of Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah, no doubt. So another set of AIs.
Ms. Pac-Man is a beautiful game.
It is. It's really good. Go play it. Another set of AIs from a game I'd like to talk about is StarCraft.
Ah!
There are competitions to devise StarCraft AIs, I believe, to this day. Mm. And the ones that come... I'm talking about StarCraft Brood War, of course. Whenever I talk about StarCraft, that's what I mean. Yes. Even though, modernly, if you just say that, it probably means StarCraft 2, for which the AI is also adequate. They did learn a lot from their previous successes as well as their failures. The random AI that you go... random AI. I'm not talking about story missions, because that has different needs.
Yes.
But rather the set of AIs that you can compete against in, like, net play, where you... everyone starts off with the same resources and has to harvest things and so on.
Yes.
And if I can sneak a second game for comparison into this, I'm going to compare it to Age of Empires 2.
Okay.
Okay. These are both RTS games, real-time strategy games, where you gather resources and build things with those resources. Okay?
Yes.
It's good in Brood War, and it's bad in Age of Empires 2.
All right.
And the reason is because... the artificial intelligence, AI, is very artificial in Age of Empires 2 and barely at all artificial in StarCraft. In StarCraft, it's playing by the same rules you are. It has to harvest things, it has to build things on a timer and get units and scout your position and go attack you.
So it's now, very symmetric in that regard.
Yes. And so more chess-like in terms of, like, capabilities and so on. In Age of Empires 2, they cheat, basically. And I had to watch a replay in order to learn how they were doing it. It's like, oh my god, he is upgrading so fast. How is that even possible? And then I watched the replay for where he gets the, like, resource injection out of nowhere. And that's, like, difficulty. It's just the AI gets more resources than you and can do things faster. And so you are inherently playing an asymmetric game with that's disguised as a symmetric one, and that's really awful. Whereas in StarCraft, the highest level of AI is fiendishly difficult. They attack in mostly preset waves, but they evaluate like your unit composition when they encounter you and build counter units and use special abilities that attack your units, and they have... massive decision trees for how to execute attacks, and it's fighting against one or more of them is a real challenge and a legitimate activity for skilled players of the game. Now, beyond a certain skill level, it becomes kind of like you've definitely surpassed them, especially these stock difficulties. Like, I never got to that level, so for me it always felt like an adequate challenge, but for like expert or master players of this game, the stock AI is not good enough and not deep enough. So there's something to it there. But I always appreciated Brood War for doing that. When I would watch the replays, the AI was also a teaching tool for me. Because
yes.
They were capable of doing anything I was, so I could watch them and say, oh... so that's a good timing, or this unit counters that unit, or I should be doing more of this. And it was a learning experience, whereas watching the replays of Age of Empires 2, I learned nothing, because it is impossible for me to replicate the same steps that they took.
Because one player has, more or less, by the regular rules of the game, cheated.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you were saying, you could learn because... you know, you could start to understand its decision trees. You could understand why it was making the decisions it was making. This is the same sort of thing you can do against a competent human opponent. In a fighting game between two humans, you are constantly attempting to understand your opponent's decision trees.
Yeah, and in the abstract, they have the same... you know, capabilities that you do.
Right.
You are capable of doing those inputs. I mean, whether or not you practice them, you go into it with the character itself being able to
do
this.
If we disregard the dexterity element of fighting games, then, you know, each player selects a character. Each character has a specified set of actions they can perform. And then it's just every time tick is a decision tree. You know, what buttons do I press or not press? What directions do I press or not press? And so I guess going back to the idea of decision trees, a useful way to make an AI more challenging is to say that a smarter or more challenging AI has a greater depth that they are allowed to plumb their decision tree before applying a heuristic to the game state. You know, an opponent that only looks one move ahead in chess can be easily fooled. Whereas an opponent that is can look five or six moves ahead in chess will be a tougher nut to crack.
Do you have any other specific games you want to call out? Because I
other
have one
specific
more.
Games. You go first. I might think of something.
Okay. Well, the last one that I absolutely want to point out, and you'll probably call shenanigans on this, but I do definitely want to mention it because it's so profoundly game changing for the kind of excellence in gaming ideas that it represents is Demon's Souls.
Mm.
Okay. There's one fight specifically in Demon's Souls that does not use AI. I mean, it does have AI. There are monsters in the game, you run around them, they approach you. The game is brutally difficult because it gives you a set of capabilities and basically makes you be skillful at it or else. And there are lots of tricks to learn as well and traps to avoid. One fight, I think at the top of a tower, I don't remember, I've only watched this and not played it, but at the top of the tower you encounter a shade, and the shade looks like a warrior that you can look like. And this game is partially played online. You know, you can like visit a friend's world or something and you appear as a ghost.
Mm.
For this specific fight, when you encounter the shade, the online component seeks out another player, extracts them from where they are, and puts them in your world as your boss fight. And they have an incentive to kill you. So they've masked an AI as a real person, or they've taken a real person and masked it as an AI, so you think you're going against this thing. Like, without knowing exactly what's going on, you can be quite perplexed at why this monster is suddenly so profoundly superior to all the others that you've fought against and such a tough challenge. It's because, well, they have similar capabilities to you and a similar brain, in fact.
Yes, and probably more experience.
Yeah, likely to that point, because it, up to that point, you only get selected if you play a bunch kind of thing. Ah, that was just this genius move that I only wish to see more of in games.
That is neat, and although I do basically hate Demon's Souls as a game, I'll at least give credit where credit is due. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Do you have one more for us? Or can I wrap this up?
No, because Thinking a lot of the games I play actually have very, very simple AIs based around easy to understand patterns and exploitation of those patterns and no adaptation. Wherein the challenge lies in playing the game to understand the pattern and understand the counter strategies for the pattern and becoming skilled at the dexterity components to implement those counter strategies.
Hmm.
Kirby, for example, does not feature an adaptive artificial intelligence controlling its boss fights or enemies. They follow simple to understand patterns with, to a large extent, simple to understand counter strategies. However, that's fine for the game.
All right, so you think an AI is good or complete enough when it matches the necessities of the game. And that's
yes.
A pretty fair idea.
AI is a design component of your game. You should be thinking about it at the design stage before, you know, it should not be put off until the implementation stage to be considered.
Oh man, I haven't even thought about AI for last. Although that's
except we were because we were planning to play games against each other to sort of start developing all that. So we are doing it in the design stage, really.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't implement AI because I don't even know what's good to do yet. It's yes. like, oh.
We've designed an interesting game for which good strategies are not immediately obvious even to the designers of the game.
Yeah.
Therefore, we as the designers will explore the game we have built in order to attempt to learn about the world. We have created the rules of the world, but that is not, and we know all the rules of the world, but that is not to say we know the world perfectly.
Yeah, there are a lot of times where I've come up with, like, game ideas and then been completely crappy at my own game. Because I'm like, oh, wait. Ah! it's really satisfying to have that happen, actually. It makes me feel that the game is larger than the component pieces of its rules.
Which usually good.
It's really good for a game. And I also think that this kind of pattern extends to AI, where you set up the initial, like, rules for what the AI is, like, structured within or capable of, and then you see it doing things that you did design but didn't expect.
Yes. You know, you set up an AI with a learning algorithm attached so it will learn from the result of games, and then just simulate 10,000 games against it.
Yeah.
And see what it thinks is good.
Wow, cool. And finally, I definitely have to add that an AI is at its best when you're not thinking about what it is as an AI. Where you're not thinking, oh, I have to trick it this specific way, or, oh, that AI is really simple, look at how poorly this is programmed, or whatever. You're not thinking about it like that. You're thinking, man, this game is cool. This guy is tough. How do I beat this guy?
This guy is so smart. How does he know that I'm here? How does he know I would come this way?
Yeah, you personally reify what is little more than a set of, like, tree rules or whatever, and just select and doing, like, expected value calculations and picking the highest number.
Yep. And it works pretty all right, turns out.
Yeah,
That's computer science.
This is, like, Ms. Pac-Man is probably the perfect expression of this in terms of, like, you know exactly what's happening, but it's still challenging enough that you don't think of it as
exactly,
this is the
AI.
He still
beats me.
You think of it as, my God, how do I escape these ghosts?
Please take my head out of this bucket of ice.
And take with it my skull!
Skulls!